Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hi. And welcome to another episode of The Lob podcast from These Football Times. I'm Gary Thacker, and with the European Championships on the horizon for the summer, across the coming weeks, I'll be chatting for half an hour or so with a number of members of the TFT team as they recount their memories of past championships and look forward to the 2024 tournament. In this episode, we'll be meandering down memory lane with Matthew Gibbs and reliving his memory of the Euros gone by. Welcome, Matthew.
Hi, good evening, Gary. Thanks for inviting me. Happy to be here.
Great. Let's get the ball out and have a kick about, as they say. And your first memory goes back a fair bit and an unexpected tournament triumph. So just tell us about your memory, mate.
My first thing to go for is when Greece won the Euros in 2004. I think it's fair to say it's one of the greatest underdog achievements in football history. Definitely in international football, possibly even like incorporating all forms of the game as well. I think for me, it is a classic case of watching a tournament at a very formative age. I think I was about 11 or 12 years old. And I remember I've definitely had this conversation with yourself and other members of the team that it's the tournament around these ages that leave like the most lasting impression on you, isn't it? I think the World Cup in 2002 is the first one that I remember sitting down and watching. But this is the one where sort of like the football fever took hold and watched as many games as I could, lived through England and Wayne Rooney's like explosion onto the scene, followed the weird journey of Greece and not knowing anything about them, but become really obsessed with a few of their players following the tournament, being absolutely convinced that they must be world beaters despite everything that followed. But yeah, I just think it's just an absolutely magnificent achievement by Greece. It's a plucky, defensive, organised team that arrived with no real stars, no history, no tournament form to lean on, with only one recognisable name really in their manager, and they end up winning and they deserve to win the whole damn thing. It's incredible. It's an amazing story.
It certainly is. You know, you look at any kind of recent major tournament, being World Cups or European Championships, and as you say, this is probably, well, I mean, this is definitively the most unexpected triumph of any team I go back as far as you want to go back, I think, pretty well. Certainly living memory. I remember the tournament well myself. I was in Spain at the time on holiday, and I watched the sort of games in the local bar there. And it's always seemed that, you know, England were doing well, and, you know, obviously Spain and Portugal as hosts were always fancied. But I don't think anybody forecast Greece to win that championship, did they?
Not at all. And I mean, I think when you take into account like the entire journey from when Otto Rehhagel first took over as Greece manager, his first game in charge, they lost 5-1 to Finland in a World Cup qualifier in 2002. Couldn't name you a single one of the Finnish players, couldn't name you anything. It was an absolute disaster. I think his first few steps along that journey as Greek manager were very difficult, and the players didn't understand him. He didn't speak Greek, they didn't speak German. He had to hire a coach who was working in Germany at the time, who managed to speak both Greek and German, who helped him understand that you're talking to people in a different culture here. They're not going to respond to how you want, like the sort of more German approach. So you need to soften your stance a little bit. And I love I'm a big fan of NFL, and this sort of reminds me of NFL in that you don't have a bottomless pit of money to choose from when it comes to international football. You have a selection of players. You don't get to go out and get someone from another country. You get this selection of players and you have to make them work. And he managed to find a way to turn this group of very unflashy, hardworking, but very energetic players into a functioning unit that I would go as far to say as well that that route through the tournament is one of the most difficult that any team has ever faced in Euro history. I mean, they played all the big guns. They even played the Czech Republic at the time, who were probably the best team in the tournament. Some of the players that they had, but he managed to turn this really unspectacular group of players into a functioning winning machine. And I mean, I personally never understand why people complain so much about the style of football, because it worked and it got them results. I understand complaints about style of football when you are Manchester United or Arsenal, or, you know, a big team with lots of money, and you have the resources to implement a more expansive style of football. But when you're Greece and you have, I don't think anybody knew a single player before the tournament at the time. And I think only a handful of them really went on to sort of, I think the right back, Seitaridis, and the centre half, Dallas, they both went on to have really, really good careers after that on the back of the, on the back of the Euros. But the rest of the team didn't really like do much after that. So I just, yeah, I the fact that they managed to turn this, yeah, this group of players into a win team, it's a magnificent coaching achievement and a really sort of testament to defence as well, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we'll touch on the players in a minute and the sort of games they sort of played. But I think you mentioned Ray Hargle. You know, there again, you know, I've said that sort of, you know, this championship success is probably the most unexpected. But as coaching goes and sort of looking at your players and organising what you've got to the best of their ability and getting the sort of the more of a sum total than the part suggested could be achievable, Ray Hargle produced an absolute miracle, didn't he?
Unbelievable coaching achievement. I think one of the more spectacular ones as well. I mean, because it wasn't like he was a defensive-minded manager first. I'm sure it's because he was very successful in Germany, wasn't he? I'm sure it's his Kaiserslautern team that were renowned for being like for playing attacking football. And he didn't just rely on one type of tactic throughout the tournament either. Like I know the game against France, mentioned in the right back against Seitaridis, the man-marking job he did on Thierry Henry marked him out of the game. Thierry Henry probably still has nightmares about him. Absolutely, like just. He was a non-entity in the game because of this man-marking job. And then getting to the final where they didn't really do the similar sort of thing in the semi-finals against the Czech Republic, but in the final it was a multiple man-marking job to neutralise the Portuguese attack. Just really spectacular job. And to do it in the way he did, because he seems like, I don't know if you've seen, there's a documentary about it called King Otto. Quite an enjoyable little documentary. He seems like quite a goofy character, very lovable and very humble as well in how they managed to do it and the hard work that was put in just especially in terms of international management, where I find international management can appear random. And I mean, if we went around some of the countries in Europe now, who's managing who, no idea. But this was very much the Greek FA knew they wanted to instill discipline. So they went for a more the German approach and getting Ray Hargle, who had such good success in Germany. I think it's just inspired selection, and then a magnificent coaching achievement.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we're going to touch on the players, and I guess people look back at World Cup finals or World Cup tournaments and European Championships tournaments, say, you know, this player was outstanding. This guy. I mean, you know, I challenge any listener here to name me three players in that Greek team. In fact, if you name two, I'd be impressed. It's such a, you know, as I say, you know, but they're a no-name team. You know, a couple of players, as you mentioned, went on to better things. But, you know, it was was it Karastakis, the centre forward?
Karastakis.
It seemed to be the sort of pinnacle of the attack. And they had a way, Ray Hargle had set up a way to make the players perform, you know, and to sort of focus on their abilities. And you know, some of the players, as you mentioned, you know, with the marking Thierry Henry out of a game is a task that many players have failed at. And yet, this guy who nobody would have heard of before had Thierry Henry in his pocket.
Amazing.
Game against the French.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, I personally had I developed a bit of an obsession with Angelos Karastasis after that tournament. I you know, being like a young kid and that you see a player... I sort of always had a thing for like really big headers, and he had a few of these really big headers. The one against France in the quarterfinals was a magnificent header. The one in the final where he outjumps the keeper. Yeah, I developed a sort of obsession with Karastasis after the tournament and just sort of followed his career where I could. And, you know, on video games like Football Manager, always tried to sign him where I could. Absolutely convinced that he would be a world beater. Absolutely convinced that what I saw in that tournament as an 11-year-old was him. Like, why don't more people, like, why don't more teams try and sign him? But a very mediocre record as a goal scorer for the rest of his career. I think he had a good year at Ajax, but apart from that, not much. But then some of the other players, like I know Karagounis had quite a good career. I think he played in the Premier League a little bit.
Leicester, I think, was it?
Yeah, something like that. He was good. Zagorakis was, player of the tournament who in midfield, and him and Karagounis, the absolute engine room. But the star of the show, really, I think for me, is the defence. And Dallas, who went on to play for Roma, and Seitaridis, who I think played for Porto and Atletico Madrid. Him especially for me, player of the tournament. I haven't watched back some of the footage, like just up and down. Like I don't know how he engine for days, because I don't know how he managed to do it and not be knackered by halftime. extraordinary legs, extraordinary machines in that team.
It's probably not true in Greece. In fact, I'm sure it's not true in Greece, but outside of that country, you know, I shouldn't think there's many people with Kalisteas on the back of their shirts and wearing a Greek replica shirt. I mean, it's strange that such a success didn't create European heroes, as it were. I mean, yes, a few players went on, but the fame never really grew over much, did it?
No, it's true. I think there's more testament to what you say was a team are greater than the sum of its parts. Without all of, like, you couldn't have one without the other. Like, you needed all 11 players and the subs that made appearances to make the machine function. I know it was a one-time thing, and the record since then has been pretty poor. But I still would never describe it as a fluke, because you don't get through something like that by luck alone.
You're absolutely right. I mean, they beat the hosts twice, didn't they? They beat them in the opening game and then beat them again in the final. I mean, you know, as you say, you know, nobody could describe that as a fluke. And, you know, I did a podcast about European Championships a while ago, and I was on the one for this tournament. And, you know, I mean, I remember Stuart Horsfield asking me, you know, were they the best team? Well, of course they were, because they won it. I mean, simple fact is they won it. That's the definition of being the best team there.
I think a lot of the tactics that they used, I'm not saying that they invented this way of playing on the international stage, but it's very popular even now, like this sort of sufferable tactics where it's a defense first approach. It's structured. For all of the talent that France have over the recent years, the way that they won the World Cup was by these sort of sufferable tactics, making sure you're structured, that you don't concede, that you rely on your quality up top to get goals. So I'm not saying that they invented it, but it was like, it was a perfect execution of it, and something that still lasts today. It's, if you go back through tournament history, whatever the tournament, it's always defenses that win you international tournaments. Have all the attacking ability you want, but Spain, when they won the World Cup, they only conceded one goal during the knockout stages. France, a handful of goals in the World Cup. It's defenses that win these tournaments, and Greece proved that.
I mean, if you can recall, did they concede many goals in the tournament? I think they won a lot of games 1-0, didn't they?
So they won the first game 2-1, they beat Spain 2-1, and then they lost to Russia, but then they did not concede a goal in the knockout stage at all. It was, I think, 1-0 against France, 1-0 against Czech Republic, and 1-0 against Portugal. So, I mean, perfect record.
It's pretty impressive. And as you say, you know, when Ray Harkle took over the team, and their first game was a 5-1 defeat against, you know, no disrespect to Finland, but they're not a first rank, you know. It's not losing to Italy or Spain or Germany.
I mean, the first footage of his press conference is, you know, he's announced to the Greek press. It's in an airport lounge, and you can hear like the people announcing this flight going to London overhead, and he's like looking around and like looks at the press, and that one journalist asks a question, nobody else does, and he's like, no more questions, okay, let's go then. And that's it. That's the announcement. Very sparse, humble beginnings that ended in absolute glory. So
I guess, you know, this for any football fan who watches you know, a tournament like that, I mean, European Championships are pretty sort of memorable anyway, but this is massively memorable because of what Greeks achieved against the odds. It's like the JFK moment. You remember where you were at the time when you were watching it, and you mentioned you were 11. So where did you watch it, at home or?
Yeah, just at home. I remember being at home. It was an unusual tournament for me, because I remember during that time, I think I was at primary school at the time, we had a school trip that was like a week long, and we stayed in like the sort of, I don't know what you call it, it was like a sort of adventure thing in the woods and stuff like that. I remember watching the England game and everyone being absolutely devastated when we got knocked out by Portugal, and then seeing like Greece get through, and then you come home and it's like, how are they still here? And then sitting in my front living room with my dad and just being absolutely baffled, and like, who are these players? Like, I know some of the guys who play for Portugal. Look, Luis Figo is that Cristiano Ronaldo guy, but then who the hell are all these Greek players? It's definitely something that's lasted with me. And I think I've been on these podcasts plenty of times, and I love an underdog story. I love any story where, and I mean, that's what football is. It's a story, it's just the narratives. And I love any story where the underdog or something unexpected happens, and it happens because of real tangible work that's been put in, and it's no fluke. It's like hard work and genius that gets you there.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, very much. You know, as I mentioned, Jimmy, remember these things. I was in a holiday in Spain, and Portugal played Spain to sort of, and I was in a bar with obviously there's a lot of Spanish fans. And once Portugal sort of knocked Spain out, when Greece got to the final, everybody was a Greek fan. You can imagine. I mean, the rivalry between Spain and Portugal is very similar to the England-Scotland rivalry. So there was a massive sort of swelling of sort of support for Greece against Portugal. And I think that probably was pretty widespread across. I mean, everybody loves an underdog story, and you know this was the classic underdog story. So, you know, they're sort of may have been sort of encouraged with a sort of sway of support across the continent, perhaps.
I will say this tournament, although I'm like a huge fan of what Greece did, one of the lasting memories for me is Czech Republic and how they played especially in the knockout stages. Like a real golden generation of players that somehow has never been replicated in that country. And I mean, I remember watching Milan Baroš as well and being like, this guy is like a world beater. Him, Jan Koller, they're just the biggest striker alive, unbelievable. And so while I'm incredibly happy about what Greece did and still am, like I was a little bit of like, it would have been cool to see Czech Republic go on to more success and maybe in the next World Cup as well, which they never really quite managed to do, did they?
No, it's true. I mean, the Czech Republic got this sort of strange relationship with international tournaments. They seem to peak for the Euros rather than for the World Cups. And as you mentioned earlier, they were, you know, arguably the best team in the tournaments. I mean, certainly if you sort 100%. Of put the hosts to one side. So and yet Greece beat them. I'm not saying Greece beat them comfortably, but tactically they were sort of subdued by the Greek approach to the game.
I want to say the only silver gold in history, right? Because it was the silver gold tournament where the first goal in extra time wins the game. And I want to say that was the only, it was a Delis header. And I want to say that was the only silver gold winner in history. But I could be wrong.
Well, I can't remember another one, I'll be honest with you. So, yeah, I mean, good point there. Yeah, good point. And it's interesting. I mean, when we talk about memories of these things I've chatted with the guys in the past is, you know, you go on to say, well, how significant was this moment in history? And you could almost say, with regard to Greece, it wasn't. I mean, they never went on and capitalised and sort of grew into other tournaments. Their clubs' teams didn't particularly prosper over much. A few of the players went on to big clubs, but there didn't seem to be a massive sort of long-lasting benefit from the triumph, did there?
No, but then maybe that's what makes it more special. It's like a golden summer, something that can never happen again, and a deeply cynical viewpoint, but modern football will never allow to happen again. I mean, even though, like we've said, that it's amazing how this happened and how international football is, you get a group of players and this is what you choose from, but like, you know, Germany and England have proven that that's not strictly true. Over time, you can develop academies, improve players from within. Look at a country like Luxembourg, what they're doing with their sort of crop of players coming through. So yeah, I think that's kind of what makes this more special. It was a golden summer. It was, everything was in line, like prophecy, whatever. It was, everything was in line in that summer that allowed this to happen. I think being Greek and experiencing that summer is something I'm very jealous of. Like, I can't imagine, it's something we as Englishmen will never experience. Even if we were to go on and win something, it wouldn't be the same as Greece winning, and especially in the way that they did it. I think that kind of makes it more special, really.
Yeah, I absolutely couldn't agree more, mate. I couldn't agree more. I guess, are Greece in this year's tournament? Am I correct?
I was literally, just before we jumped on this, watching them against Georgia in the playoff, and they were awful and lost on penalties. So they won't be there. It'll be Georgia instead. I mean, some of the players they've got some real quality in the squad. I mean, they got like Tsimikas at left back. I mean, what Reinhagel could have done with someone like Tsimikas at left back? I don't know much of the other players, but they've got some actual quality in there and some recognisable names, which is something that they didn't have at the time in 2004. So yeah, makes you wonder.
I guess, you know, for some people, the Euros has always been the poor relation, the sort of second sibling to the World Cup. But what do the Euros mean to you?
I mean, the Euros, I'm always a big fan of any year that has a summer tournament. I love, I'm one of these people that I blow really hot and cold on international football. When it's the qualifiers, when it's friendlies, I'm very much not interested and find myself quite switched off, especially as an Englishman. But when it comes around to the tournaments, I get sucked into it. I love it. I'm lucky enough to have a job where I work from home mostly these days, so I will be able to sit in front of the TV and watch the entire thing. The Euros as well, I think, are quite unique in that because of the nature of European football, and we have most of the heavy, I'd say quite the majority of the heavy hitters in the world are in this continent, that there's a real condensed quality, which means that there is, it somehow makes it more capable of there being shocks. I know in every tournament, there's always like a sort of a team that you don't expect to go further, which doesn't generally happen at World Cup. So I feel like the quality sort of wins out in the end in World Cup. So I think Euros are a lot of fun and a lot more prone to upsets, even if eventually it's usually, and especially since 2004, it's usually one of the bigger traditional nations that win it.
Yeah, it's interesting, I guess, that, you know, when the Euros started originally back in the 60s, you know, it was a four-team tournament, and, you know, it's grown now, and there's now 104 teams qualify for it. And I guess in Europe, you know, you could almost argue that perhaps the European champs are more difficult to win than the World Cup, because all the strong European teams, because the expanded qualification process, now hardly any of the big guns, you know, as often called, miss out, do they?
Yeah, I mean, that sort of does ruin it. And I'm always one that don't really like it when the groups don't match up either. Now we've got like six groups now, and so you'll have like a best place third finish going through, and it sort of sucks the jeopardy out of the situation and does make it more likely for the bigger nations to go through, which is a cynical viewpoint again, but probably why they do it. So it is a bit of a shame, but I feel like that hasn't led to a real drop in quality. I thought 2016 especially was quite a good year. There was quite a few shocks in that. Some good performances and some unexpected teams getting further than you'd expect. Same in every tournament, but I thought Euro, the last one, 2020, where you had Denmark overcoming what happened to Eriksen, and they were probably the team of the tournament for me. They played the best football, and if it wasn't for England, probably should have got to the final. So yeah, I feel despite the condensation of quality, it's usually one where you get more surprises. So usually is slightly more interesting. But I think I've been on with yourself before on a previous one where I talk about the Euros and say I get whiplash every time going from the group stages to, granted there is now a round of 16, but before when it used to be straight away to the quarterfinals, it's serious now. It's straight away, it's from group stages to the serious stuff, which I like. It heightens the jeopardy.
I agree. Just to close out then, it won't be Greece because of what you said earlier. Do you see Greece, if inverted commas, going close this tournament? And who do you think will win?
I have my eye on Austria. I think Austria are quite interesting at the minute. I think they could be the surprise team to get. I know they were kind of in the group of death in inverted commas, but they have some really good players. Christopher Baumgartner, who has been quite an interesting player for a while, but I think everyone saw his goal after 6 seconds against, I can't remember who it was against the other day. And I think what Ralf Rangnick is doing there is very interesting. He's touring the country instead of just playing home games in Vienna, calling good players from the Austrian league, which is not something that's always happened. And more recently, not calling good players when they were found to be using homophobic slurs. I think like it's implementing his philosophy of football, and it's working, but also doing it in the right way and not just, you know, if someone's been horrible, you're not going to be called up. We can't stand for that. I think they're onto something good. And I think playing in a group where Netherlands aren't at their strongest, France have looked a bit ropey in the last year, I say. They've still got the results, but the performances haven't been there, I would say. And then they've got Poland in the group. I think they've got a good fist of it to make it to the end. I still think it'll be one of the traditional, like France or someone who win the entire thing. But I think Austria could be the ones to look out for.
It's interesting. They've employed a German coach to take over, and a team unexpected. Can they do it under Greece? Who knows? I mean, if they do or get close, it'll certainly be a memorable tournament. But nothing would cap the surprise that Greece delivered in.
That Greek team are immortal. Not just the fact that they're Greek as well leads itself to so many puns and sort of funny lines to do with Greek mythology. I'm sure the headline writers at the time were very happy when it happened. But yeah, they are immortals, and it's something that will never ever be replicated again, I firmly believe.
No, unfortunately. Mind you, you never know, do you? I mean, I guess before that tournament, nobody expected Greece to do it, so that's football, and I'll never say never. Yeah. Anyway, thanks, Matthew. That was great. Thanks for coming on and sharing your memory with us, buddy.
No, cheers. Thank you.
Okay, well, that completes us this stroll down memory lane. Many thanks to Matthew for sharing his thoughts with us. Catch us again next time when I'll be chatting with another member of the TFT team about their recollection of the European Championships. But for now, bye-bye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists, and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.